You're listening to a special presentation of The Greg Tiss Show, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. on Tallahassee's only locally owned radio station, Real Talk 93.3.
Joining me in studio, Renee Miller from City Walk Urban Mission.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm wonderful, how are you?
Good, thank you so much for waking up early.
You got it.
Coming in.
So anything for you, Tish.
Oh, thank you, thank you. If Maddie, if you need any coffee or anything, let Maddie Rowe know, because he's not drinking coffee this morning, so I want to make him suffer.
That way I can smell it, and maybe that'll come in vicariously through me, and I'll be able to wake up a little bit.
So, Renee, you've been in the news a little bit the last few weeks with the shelters going on Mahan. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But first, let me people that may not be familiar with you or your mission, let everybody know, introduce yourself to everybody out there.
Hey, Tallahassee. So our family have been urban missionaries and church planters in Tallahassee since 2012. Prior to that, we had another nonprofit since 2010, but really doing inner city mission work since 2007. So quite a long time in working with impoverished neighborhoods and people in crisis. We are a church, and a lot of the people that we serve in our congregation are people who are in crisis because, I mean, everybody's invited. We have families and people that come that are not experiencing any homelessness or crisis, but that has been a population that we have set out that the Lord put on our hearts that we needed to serve. And we have a lot of different services for the homeless. We started with clothes closet and food pantry and Christian counseling and our church, and then also we, in 2013, we opened our first men's home, which was a 12-month program that we wrote for transitional housing with a work and reentry program for men coming out of prison or people coming out of chronic homelessness, but it was just for men. Prior to City Walk, we had another nonprofit called Mount Moriah, and that was a women's home. It's so much easier. I can take care of 100 men to 5 women. I put that away for a little bit and just worked on having the men's homes, and then we ended up with 3 men's homes. And then when COVID hit, we had so many people in our congregation that was literally every single door shut in their face, and I emailed every official and nonprofit, everybody I could think of, saying these people are like bathing in water hoses outside of City Walk, and they're putting up tents in our parking lot, and there's no place for them. What can we do? What can we
do? Everything shutting down.
Yeah, everything shut down. And so literally people were just wasting away. And a lot of our church members that are experiencing homelessness are senior citizens. And they would just come in crying, going, I haven't had a bath in 3 months. Or I'm number 300 on the waiting list to get into a Kearney Center hotel, and I just want to kill myself. Or they're relapsing and taking drugs because they're afraid to go to sleep because they're going to be murdered or jumped, and so they take meth so that they can stay awake all the time, and they're just ruining themselves. And so when winter was approaching, I reached out to all the commissioners and city and county, said, we're here to help. What can we do? We would love to have your support if you want to tell us where we can do this, but this is our plan. And we got some FaceTime with some of them. They were really nice. I mean, even on October the 7th, I met with John Daly in his office. I showed him a whole proposal. He's like, oh, I love this. Whatever you can do. I don't think the city can fund it, but God bless you. We need your help. And then, you know, sent me emails back and forth afterwards, like, let's keep this, you know, talking. And then, we joined with Big Bend Continuum of Care and were set up as a cold night shelter. However, I did let them know prior to becoming a cold night shelter that we were not just going to be a cold night shelter.
Okay.
That we were going to, we were going to help our congregation members as a tenant of our faith throughout.
And that's where the issues started to come up with the city that they were authorized for the cold night shelter. Mm-hmm. This is the Mahan Drive location. Mm-hmm. And then that's where they said, well, you're not authorized to continue this. And then so things kind of, support from the city, from your eyes, kind of split at that point.
So the support from the city split when there were some powerful developers that donate to 3 of the commissioner's campaigns, put pressure on them because they have a strip mall in the area and some big names who are people that they felt were more important than the people we serve, that's when the city pulled, not because we were open. In fact, the city was complacent and supportive of the entire process until that happened. TPD brought people every day, just about. The hospitals, well, the hospitals still send people every day. We had just about every branch of law enforcement bringing people over. Then even when the cold night stopped and they pulled away from us, they still covertly would send people through other agencies. But we knew where they were coming from.
When with this building on Mahan, is something y'all purchased or something that you've leased?
We got a 10-year lease. Okay. And prior to getting the lease, we made sure that it was properly zoned. It is a permitted use. We are in OR2, which allows for transitional housing, which emergency shelter and supportive housing and transitional housing all falls under that. And we'll let the city know that we would be applying for change of use. We got a lot of misinformation at first, back in the first part of December, when we started calling about how do we change the use. One of the things that we were told by the city was, unless you're doing so many thousands of dollars worth of renovations, then you don't need to get a building permit. And I thought that was odd, because I was like, well, we still have to change the use.
Well, because it was an office building. It was an office building before. The history of that, it's right at the top of the hill, right on Mahan. Mm-hmm. If you take a left on Mahan off of Magnolia, or take a right and you go down the hill by the Shell station, and then right at the top.
It's a marathon, yeah.
And you said it was a state office building?
It was. Like, back in the 80s, it was an accounting company. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was like Williams Cox, Widener & Cox, and then in the... Later on, it was the Department of Banking and Finance for Department of Corrections. And then it's just set empty and disgusting and rotting and, you know, complete disrepair and an eyesore, actually, for about 8 years.
So how do you go in with the office building and then say, all right, I want to make transitional housing out of this? There's got to be a lot. You can't just throw up a cot. You've got to have... restrooms. You got to have.
Well, it has multiple kitchenettes and multiple restrooms on every floor. It was actually perfectly set up. The only thing we were requesting to get building permits for is that we wanted to have a sprinkler system and indoor showers. So we have plenty of bathrooms and toilets and everything, but we do want to get indoor showers. Well, we can't bring the building up to code for that unless they allow us to change the use. So. Chicken or egg. So there was a lot of misinformation even given to us and our board going into how do you change the use. And then when we were in full operation in December, John Reddick from the growth management and Abena Ojateo from the housing and community resilience, she's the director there for the city, they were there touring and they were like, oh, this is great. And he's like, yeah, we're going to send you information on how to make this permanent. And it was so supported. Until it wasn't.
And we're going to talk about that when we get back. We got Renee Miller from City Walk. She's joining us here on the Greg Tisch Show. We'll be right back after this quick break. I love this song. This song just makes you feel good. Shalimar, right? In studio with me, Renee Miller from City Walk Urban Mission. We're talking about the transitional housing facility that they've set up on Mahan Drive, and the city has come by and said, hey, you know, what you're using your facility for is not coded for that, and you applied for the codes or applied to
change the use.
Change that, and they said no. And then they said, you can't operate as this, and you said, no, we're going to continue to operate. And it's a big news item right now that you're at the center of the news item. This, and they say no press is bad press. And so everybody's chatting about what's going on Mahan. What we talk about a lot here is what we see, what Maddie Rowe and I see every single day on Monroe Street, that it is the people suffering from homelessness out here. The aggressiveness of some of them out here is pretty tough to watch. We see that some people may be pulling off the interstate, and this may be the only chance that they get to see of Tallahassee. And what some of the people suffering from homelessness around here, the aggressiveness that they go through, that you're in every day in the trenches. But then I see about the shelter, but I automatically, my mind compares puts Mahan and Monroe in the same boat. What we see out here is that what they're seeing on Mahan.
Absolutely not. Mahan is quiet. Mahan is beautiful. There's not litter. Our campus is beautiful. I think our campus is probably overgroomed because we really have some guys that like to do landscaping. There's not a cigarette butt that you're going to find. And we do a litter patrol from our campus to the light at Magnolia and the median and back up. And it's not our trash, but we feel as though that that's our neighborhood and we're going to do it as a community service. It's completely not. I live on Lake Jackson and I see Monroe Street as well. And, you know, I hate it. I hate it for the people who are suffering. I hate it for the businesses. I hate it for the community. I feel like I'm going to hit somebody with my car every time I'm on Monroe Street. I'm like, is this the day I run somebody over that they darts in front of my car?
And it happened. I mean, we've had two in the last month.
Yep.
And it's a big problem here. But again,
but it's not that on Mahan Drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, drive. I the only thing I can do is you have to see it for yourself. Don't speculate. You just drive down both roads and do your own comparison.
So what would you say to the neighbors that have any of the neighbors that have been opposing the shelter or what you're doing out there? Have they come by to see what they're doing? What would you tell them if they were sitting here with us?
Well, you really can't put a judgment on something that you haven't seen. And I know, you know, we all have our biases or things that make us, everybody has their own level of safety and what makes them feel safe. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine being afraid of somebody who's houseless or somebody of another race or, you know, somebody that has less than I am. But there are, I mean, literally people are telling me, I'm afraid of homeless people. I don't get that. But come and meet them, because I think sometimes people have this image that it's a drug dealer or it's a drug user or it's somebody who's just out of their mind and they're going to hurt me. But in reality, I mean, I would say over 30% of our clients that we're serving are elderly. They're senior citizens, 70s, 80s. We have multiple people in wheelchairs that need help with daily activities. They're paralyzed. Some have had strokes. Some have seizures. Some have cancer. We actually had hospice bring us somebody a couple of weeks ago who's terminally ill, was living in a Walmart parking lot. You can't really do hospice services in a Walmart parking lot. And right. So, you know, it was our honor to take care of him, you know, in his 70s. So when you come in and you see it, I mean, the news was there yesterday and the first thing they did was they walked in, they were like, it smells like Fabuloso in here. And what I always hear is, this place is so clean. And the number one question I get when people come for tours are, where are all the homeless people? Well, they're at work. They have jobs. They just don't have a house. Or the ones that are there, you can tell, like, they can't have a job. They're elderly, they're disabled, whatever. But it's clean and it's bright and it's happy and there are classes going on and services going on and people are getting better. And it's shocking when you have one perspective going in, people are like, oh, this is not what I thought it was.
But what about the perceptions of the neighborhood with, like, the sexual predators?
Sure. Well, we have made a policy to not take anyone who has the designation of predator. I will say that one of the people who had that designation was sent to us by the city to take care of, and we took care of that person. And that's so disingenuous for the city to go, oh, I can't believe you're doing that, and I can prove where they came from through HMIS, that it came through Cold Night Shelter, and that multiple sexual offenders have been brought to us, at least three, through the city. And I will say that having someone who's monitored 24/7 and all, you know, has 16 cameras on them and you know where they're at all times is much safer than someone who's just living in the woods behind your house that may be. But the people that we have there now, we did make a decision. It was bothering people so much that we made other arrangements for the two people that were there. Again, one came from the city, that were registered as a predator, to not be there. And they're not everybody who's on the registry can be there. It all depends on their orders. But if they legally can be there and they are an offender, we allow them to. We have a female registrant that's there right now. They were a prostitute in Frenchtown. This charge was a very long time ago, and that those kinds of things happen when you have that lifestyle.
How many residents do you have? You have 64 individuals?
On average, okay. Yeah. So
how do they find out? I mean, do you guys go out into the community and say, hey, we're here? I mean, how do the people suffering from homelessness find out about you?
A lot of times it is through different agencies, you know, veteran services or social workers send us a lot. Healthcare workers send us a ton. There are a lot of people that the hospitals serve that are experiencing homelessness, and their social workers try to place them somewhere. And they're just, we've been the only place that they could place so many of them.
Because with the other being closed. And you were saying off the air, you were saying, oh, they just Google us. And I was like, huh?
Yeah. They go to the library or they'll have a phone and, you know, they're asking people, friends tell friends. But I do want to share how we keep our campus safe. We didn't do this when we were partnered with the city for Cold Night Shelter. They just kind of bussed them in and dropped them off, and we felt like we had to.
And that was through the county program, the city that coming with the. Okay.
We felt that we needed to take everybody they were sending us. There was this illusion that they were going, I say illusion, there was discussions that we were going to be compensated for every person they sent, and we felt like to keep that relationship that we needed to serve people, even though some of them are not people that we necessarily would have served. It made us uncomfortable. So since that relationship ended, what we decided to do is we were going to do their full vice-bedat interview, which is, for those of you who are not familiar, is what social workers use to triage clients. It's a very long interview questionnaire process to see what their needs and if we could properly serve them, or if they would be served better elsewhere. And then we do an interview intake process with them. And we are not a low barrier. They keep saying we're low barrier. We stopped being low barrier in January when we stopped with the city. Or they dumped us and then we dumped them, whatever. We have been really focused on people who do want to change, people who are not in active addiction. And also when they come in, they also have to sign an agreement of what the rules are for our campus, what the rules are for their neighborhood. And then we are actively helping them get on. I mean, the goal is not to stay at City Walk forever and be homeless in a church, no matter how great our church is. But the goal is to get them into permanent housing. And so they need jobs. We have companies or organizations that come in and they help people once a week get jobs. One guy was at our shelter for less than a week and he already got a job at TMH with benefits and retirement. And others are working, literally they just don't have jobs. You know the housing crisis that we're in right now. Selling my house in Crawfordville for $300,000, that same house and land is $600,000 here. Our prices are ridiculous. And if you have a background, you have any charges on you, you're not going to get into any subsidized housing.
What is he on with going back with the city? What is your next step?
We are in the appeal process. Okay. And if that doesn't bring relief, we will move forward with a federal lawsuit because our federal rights have been violated on multiple fronts. There is the, you know, government can't interfere with your practice of religion. The free practice thereof is definitely being violated. It is a tenet of faith. Churches can feed, they can clothe, and they can shelter. And that scripture that is based on is all one scripture from Jesus Christ, that you shelter the poor wanderer and you bring the poor into your midst and take care of them. And so to take that part of, say, your church can't do this, it takes away a huge portion of what our faith practice is. The other thing is that, you know, churches are protected to do this under the Constitution, but then also expanding on that is the RUPA, which is the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, which gives very broad protections for churches to do this type of thing. And the city has been, you know, told by our attorney and in case law, and they've been shown where they are violating the law, not only of City Walk, but federal housing also. The people that we're serving have rights.
Renee, thank you so much for coming in and letting everybody know more about what you guys are doing and what is going on Mahan.
Thanks
and
for having me.
And you're welcome to come anytime you want.
Awesome.
Listen to The Greg Tisch Show with Steve Stewart when we get back.